And now, more tips with your host, Rebecca, on lifestyle improvement.
And remember that in our program, we present our opinion and the opinion of our guest, and is not to be interpreted as medical advice. Welcome again to Lifestyle Improvement. And today we present part two of our interview with Martha Stettinius, the author of the book Inside the Dementia Epidemic, one of the top books of 2014 by Alzheimer's.net. You also talked about your own health in this book. Talk to me about that a little bit.
Well, like a lot of caregivers, I found that I did not pay attention to my own health when I was mom's caregiver, especially when she lived with us. I just didn't have time or energy to think about my own health. I developed allergies. I got bronchitis at the drop of a hat. Now, I didn't have more serious things. A lot of caregivers who are older get, you know, heart disease and other more serious conditions. But I was very overweight. I was about 50 pounds heavier than I am now. And I didn't exercise. I didn't pay attention to what I ate. It was only after mom was settled into assisted living that I had time or energy to think about my own health. So I'm in much better shape now. I still have more weight to lose, but I do a number of things to lower my own risk of Alzheimer's disease. There's no proven way to prevent Alzheimer's disease, but there are research does show that there are a number of things you can do to reduce your risk. And I try and pay attention to those things to protect my own health. For example, I've never been a smoker, but I've tried to lose weight. I'm exercising more. I do weight training twice a week because studies have shown that weight training twice a week improves the cognitive performance of people with mild cognitive impairment. That's like the early stage of dementia, mild cognitive impairment. So I figure I'm getting a head start on that now. I don't have mild cognitive impairment yet, but I'm doing the weight training. What else? I'm eating low carb. I'm trying to eat a paleo diet because if your blood sugar is on the high side of normal, which mine is, I'm not diabetic, I'm pre-diabetic, that increases your risk. I just read an article in the New York Times a couple of days ago that said that 50% of Americans are diabetic or pre-diabetic. And that puts them at risk not only for dementia, but cancer and heart disease and all kinds of things. So one of the things I care about the most as an advocate for dementia caregivers is helping people realize that while they cannot prevent Alzheimer's in any particular way, they can lower their own risk, which is so important, especially for those of us who have mothers with Alzheimer's disease, because if your mother had it, you're more likely to get it yourself.
Right.
Unfortunately, I'm sorry, but that's true.
Correct. That information is out there. I love that in one of the parts in your book, you said, how would I feel in her place? And that was very telling because as we're looking at the people we care for and as we're looking at taking care of ourselves, there's also that dynamic going on that is the emotional part. And it is difficult sometimes to be able to come to the place where you put aside yourself in order to care for this person and not feel maybe feelings of anger, frustration, etc. But I really like how you said that because that seemed to have helped you to understand her better.
I wasn't very good at thinking about that when mom moved in with us. I was so focused on my own life and my children and my husband and my job. I wasn't used to thinking about mom that much, thinking about how she might have felt to have lost her home, having had to move out of her home into someone else's home, how she might have felt about losing the ability to drive. She couldn't drive anymore safely, losing her friends in the area where she had lived and moving to a brand new city. Those things really didn't cross my mind at the time. It was only later, looking back, that I thought about them. But part of what I write about in my book is how I learned over those 8 years to look at things more from my mother's perspective, and how she might feel about things, especially when she lost the ability to speak. I had to sort of intuit more about how she might be feeling and pay closer attention. Paying attention like that is something that I resisted for a long time because of my history with my mother. When I was growing up, my mom was an active alcoholic. She put herself into treatment when I was 14 and stayed sober the rest of her life. But we had that legacy between us of my having grown up with alcoholism. And part of that, when you grow up as an adult child of an alcoholic, you learn to pay attention to the person's facial expression, their body language, to see whether or not they're mad or something, to protect yourself.
Sure.
So not only did I resist caregiving because I didn't want to play that role again like I did when I was a young teenager and mom was drinking. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to play that role. I resisted at first because I didn't want to have to pay really close attention to her feelings. But something about her frailty, you know, when your parents are frail, even if you have a difficult history, something in you, just an instinct kicks in and you feel like you want to help them and take care of them and protect them, even if you have a challenging history. And that's what happened. And the caregiving helped heal all those old wounds. And after all of that, I didn't mind paying close attention anymore. It felt very healing to me.
That's wonderful. So do you feel that this time was a time of forgiving and forgiveness, that it helped you come to that place?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, before mom's dementia kicked in, we did many years working together to communicate better. We both went to counseling, and we tried before the dementia started. We tried to grow closer, and we made a lot of progress. Mm-hmm. But it was only after the caregiving started that I had to let go of any lingering resentment. I had to let go of it because she was childlike. She couldn't remember any of our conflicts. She was just trusting and loving. You could tell how much she loved me, even near the end when she could no longer say my name. You could tell that I was so important to her, and that connection just got really stronger as the years went by. And so, yeah, it's definitely very healing time. Now, that may not be true for everyone, but it was for us, and I know from talking to other caregivers that it can be for them as well.
And I think what I hear you say, which I think is a reality for many, is that even beyond the physical disability or impairment, the love came through, or the love was able to overcome the physical limitations. So in your book, because it's just a wonderful book, like you have shared, of emotional reality and healing and forgiveness and journey of wholeness, you talk about a more factual side of things when you deal with the science, which I think is fascinating. You have the appendix, which is full of science. And I would like you to talk a little bit about that. One of the things you talked about is the relationship between trans fat and dementia.
Well, as I say in the appendices of my book, we won't know 30 years from now if the nutritional advice we get will help us prevent Alzheimer's or not. We won't know until time passes. Mm-hmm. But we know now that trans fat that you find in margarine, Crisco, a lot of baked goods, that's really bad for your arteries and puts you at a higher risk for dementia. Now, I grew up on margarine, like a lot of people, because it was less expensive than butter. And they told us that butter was bad for you. So mom ate it. I ate it. Mom was eating it right up till the end of her life, I'm pretty sure. So there are a lot of things that are bad for your heart and your arteries that are also bad for your brain. In the appendices, I include information like that that I wish I had known 10 years ago. I wish my mother had known. It's all information that I've researched thoroughly. And I had several experts on dementia review all that information to make sure it was accurate.
This is your host, Rebecca. And now we will take a short break, and we will be right back with more ideas on lifestyle improvement.
Specialized approach to spinal care is what you will find in the Advanced Spinal Care Clinic in Graham, Washington. Here's Dr. Craig Lipinski explaining why Nuka Care is unlike any other treatment.
Our goal is that we're making a specialized correction to the skull, the atlas, and the neck of each individual that is custom made or custom and specific created to get them healthy and then have them stay that way.
One of only 23 board certified Nuka practitioners in the world, Dr. Craig Lipinski offers you care that can significantly impact your health in positive ways.
This week we've seen somebody in here who's had a 50-point drop in blood pressure by having the skull, atlas, and neck corrected to a proper position.
To find out more about how Nuka Care can change your life, visit www.nuccawashington.com or call 253-445-8181.
I didn't want to put that scientific information in the middle of my personal story, because when a lot of us read memoir, we want to get lost in the personal story without stopping to read about scientific studies.
Sure.
So I had a bunch of volunteers, readers read my book before I published it. And they told me, why don't you put all that scientific stuff in the appendices? So I did that. So I have 9 concise appendices that people can read if they want the information. Mm-hmm. One appendix, for example, is about all the reasons why it's helpful to get an early diagnosis of dementia as early as you can, so you can participate in studies or make plans for financial arrangements, mm-hmm. or, you know, talk to your family about what your wishes are for your care. The earlier you get diagnosed, the better. So each appendix has information like that that I wish I had had earlier, much earlier.
And it's great and very helpful information. There are 3 pieces of information that I thought were very significant that, you know, anybody that is listening to this program, even we want you to, of course, have the opportunity to read this great book. But if nothing else, 3 things that came to my mind. The importance of exercise, number one. You talked about the importance of exercise. The other 2, which I would like you to touch upon, is the connection between Alzheimer's and sleep apnea. And then last but not least, Alzheimer's and diabetes.
Those are all great. Thank you for bringing those up. According to researchers, exercise may be our best antidote for Alzheimer's disease. Mm-hmm. There's no proven way to prevent Alzheimer's disease again, but regular exercise may be your best means of prevention. That and not smoking and eating well and getting a lot of social activity with people, but exercising. It might be better to put down the Sudoku puzzle that you're working on to exercise your brain. It might be better to put that puzzle down and get up and go for a walk. Mm-hmm. That's actually better for your brain health. sleep apnea. According to sleep researchers, almost as many people have sleep apnea as they have diabetes, but people don't know they have sleep apnea. That is when you stop breathing as when you're sleeping. You might be snoring and then you stop snoring and you kind of snort and stop breathing for a moment. You literally stop breathing. And it's bad for your brain, clearly because it's not getting the oxygen it needs, but also because there's something called beta amyloid. It's a protein that many researchers think plays a role in the development of Alzheimer's disease. There's some disagreement there, but most believe that it plays a role. And beta amyloid is supposed to drain out of your brain into your spinal column while you're sleeping. And if your sleep is interrupted repeatedly, then that's not draining out. It's building up and it's going to create those plaques we see in people with Alzheimer's disease. So I was really fortunate. 5 years ago, I found out that I have sleep apnea. Mm. It was just a fluke where I found it out. I was waking up with headaches. I was tired despite 9-10 hours of sleep. So I had a sleep study done and I had sleep apnea. I was waking up 20 times an hour and not remembering it. 20 times an hour, I would stop breathing and wake up. So I have to wear a CPAP mask every night and I feel much, much better now. And my risk for dementia has gone down because I'm being treated for it. Elderly women, I think it's 65 and over, who have sleep apnea are much more likely to develop Alzheimer's disease. And it's just bad for everyone.
Yes.
But it's one of those risk factors that we don't hear about a lot for Alzheimer's disease and probably vascular dementia from small strokes, is the second most common type of dementia. My mother had vascular dementia and probably Alzheimer's disease, but mm-hmm. Alzheimer's disease was never definitively diagnosed, and as it often is not, because it's a matter of going through a battery of tests to rule out other causes. But anyway, I digress. The third thing you talked about was diabetes. Alzheimer's disease has been called type 3 diabetes. There's definitely a link between people who have diabetes and an increased risk for Alzheimer's disease. And as I said earlier, you can be pre-diabetic. You can have blood sugar levels that are on the high side of normal. And your doctor may not be too concerned because you're not diabetic, but if your blood sugar is high, you're still at a much higher risk. It's a 70% greater risk to develop Alzheimer's disease if you have pre-diabetes.
Wow.
Now, I am also pre-diabetic. Last time I got my blood sugar tested, it was on the high side of normal. I'm insulin resistant. That's the same thing. I carry weight around my middle, around my abdomen. That's also true for my mother. So if you carry weight around your middle, you're probably insulin resistant. And I can't tell you the exact number of people in the United States who are insulin resistant, but it's a huge, huge number. Huge number. I think I was maybe 50%. Mm-hmm. I mentioned in the article earlier that just came out in the New York Times or USA Today. It just came out in the USA Today. 50% of people are either diabetic or pre-diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
So that puts you at an increased risk for Alzheimer's disease. So I try and eat low carb to keep my blood sugar down.
Right.
So I figure at age 49, if I can do these things to lower my risk, it can't hurt, right?
Right, exactly.
Better to do it now than to wait 20 years and try then. So
absolutely. And you know, as I hear you speaking, it comes to my mind that education is the best preventive measures, because maybe blood sugar is something that is easily tested,
mm-hmm,
but
right.
Sleep apnea is very costly and very seldom is it tested unless there are some very significant symptoms, correct?
Yeah, most people with sleep apnea don't know that they have it, according to the American Sleep Foundation, I think. It's education. It's hearing maybe on Facebook or somewhere that if you wake up tired, wake up with a headache, if you're tired all day despite being in bed for a normal amount of time, if you're falling asleep at the wheel or napping all day and you're just exhausted, tell your doctor you need a sleep study. And yes, it's expensive, but they also have, they have some other less expensive things they can try now. They have some, I don't remember what they're called, but they have less expensive therapies. Like, you don't even, you can do a sleep study in your own home now. You don't even have to go to the hospital to do it. You can wear these monitors and do it at home, and it's less expensive.
Well, Martha, that is great advice. And, you know, your book is rich with information concerning that. So anybody that wants to know more about it, of course, can purchase your book and get more information about how to become aware of so many of the factors that are involved with possibly preventing Alzheimer's. So what I would like here at the end, Martha, is for you to give the listeners just a little bit of your wisdom about what you learned through this journey. I know you put a lot of it in your book, but give the listeners just jewels that they can take with them. If anybody that is thinking about possibly caregiving, what would you tell that person to become aware of?
That's a really good question. Thank you. I would really tell the person to not try to do everything by themselves. I think when we start to take care of our parents in particular, we feel like we should do everything for them and we should be everything for them and try and have all the answers on our own. And I think that we burn out easily. So we need to look for support in the community. A good place to start is your county office for the aging. They usually have free counseling and a free caregiver support group that you could join. If you don't have time to leave your loved one to go to a caregiver support group in person, there are a number of great support groups on Facebook. I moderate one for U.S. Against Alzheimer's. It's U.S. Against Alzheimer's. It's called their community support group. I moderate that group for people with dementia and their care partners. And there are a number of other groups on Facebook that you could join, and you could share your concerns and your feelings with people who understand. They've been there and they know what you've been going through. So don't try and do caregiving all on your own. You can talk to your office for the aging about respite services to get people into your home to take over for a couple of hours so you can get a break. There are some great books out there and websites about how you can build what's called a circle of care. In fact, one book is called Share the Care. So you could look up their website, Share the Care, or get their book. It's about how to invite friends, neighbors, other family members, people in your religious community, how to invite them to help you as a caregiver. So you don't have to do everything by yourself. That's so important. I'd also recommend to people that they think about hiring a geriatric care manager, which is not something I felt I could afford back then, but looking back, I wish I had hired a geriatric care manager. It's a social worker or a nurse who specializes in elder care. They could meet with you and help you make those decisions that can be so stressful. I wish I had done it because mom's savings ended up being spent when she went on Medicaid. All of her savings were gone anyway, so you might as well spend some money up front to make the best decisions and to reduce your stress. Long-term care is one of those things that you don't think about until you have to think about it. Only 3% of Americans buy private long-term care insurance. And unfortunately, the United States does not have public long-term care insurance. Most Americans need long-term care. Some need it for up to 5 years or more. But as far as long-term care facilities, I wanted to mention, if your loved one has dementia, consider a memory care facility, which is usually assisted living for people with dementia. because if your loved one is in the early stages of Alzheimer's disease or another dementia, they move into conventional assisted living, they're probably not going to get as much help as they need. And you're going to end up having to move them again anyway. So a lot of people don't know what memory care is, but it was wonderful for my mother when she was in memory care until she ran out of savings and she had to move to a nursing home. But memory care is very special because their activities are geared toward people with dementia. The staff is trained to deal with people with dementia, to avoid aggressive behavior, to treat the person as a person and not a patient. And it's generally a peaceful place to live. My mother's memory care facility was quite lovely, and I wish she could have stayed there forever.
Thank you for being honest, and thank you for being willing to open up your heart and share your personal experience with your mother with the rest of the world and our listeners. Would you come back to our program and talk to us again?
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Fantastic. We'd love to have you back.
If you would like to advertise with us, please give us a call at 877-957-7387, extension 101. That again is 877-957-7387, extension 101. Or send us an email to producer@lifestyleimprovement.com. That again is producer@lifestyleimprovement.com. Thank you for listening to our program today, and tune in again next week for more tips on lifestyle improvement.